This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly look at diet and nutrition. Our guest this month is registered dietitian David Grotto. Grotto, a former spokesman for the American Dietetic Association, is a dietitian who advocates a diet high in variety, and his emphasis is on what to eat rather than what not to eat. We'll talk with him about the role good foods play in wellness and well-being, and we'll also hear about his very own battle with high cholesterol. David Grotto is the author of 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. The book, available in paperback from Bantam, is an alphabetically arranged guide to foods that are good for us. The book's entries range from acai berries to yogurt. Now, if you don't know what acai berries are, stay tuned. We'll tell you about them. The entries include information about nutritional value and health benefits of the foods, and each entry includes a recipe to help you incorporate the food into your diet. David Grotto is the founder, and president of Nutrition House Call, LLC, a consulting firm specializing in family nutrition programs. He serves on the scientific advisory board at Men's Health. He's a columnist for Nation's Restaurant News and a contributing writer for Prevention Magazine. You'll find more about our guest at his website, www.101foodsthatcouldsaveyourlife.com. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. Your questions and comments are invited for our guest, registered dietitian David Grotto. We look forward to hearing from you. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. David Grotto, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today. Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. You went from a cholesterol level of 238 to 168 in a month. How did you do it?
Well, the ironic thing is, this is my maiden voyage as a writer, and I didn't really know how to balance my time. So in trying to make deadlines, I started sacrificing me. I stopped eating the foods that I know that would be good for me, got away from my physical activity program. Ironically, as I was typing about making butts and guts smaller, mine were getting bigger. I gained about 10 to 15 pounds writing the book, and I discovered, as I was doing some consulting for firefighters here in Chicago, they had a study that came out showing that firefighters were at much greater risk of dying from a heart attack not even putting out a fire, even on their way to the fire, in fact. So they had held very high cholesterol levels for quite some time, and I thought, as an act of solidarity, I would offer my own arm and have my own cholesterol drawn to be somewhat shocked at my own four-alarm fire coursing through my veins, a cholesterol of 238. So I said, well, maybe I'll do something really crazy here. How about if I follow my own advice that I'm trying to get these guys to do? So I started off with a very simple program. I started my day with a bowl of oatmeal, and in fact, this was in the middle of August. It was 100 degrees in Chicago, so these guys said, I'm not interested in eating hot oatmeal. What can we do with oatmeal? So I made a European-style muesli, which is just raw oats, a handful of almonds, some delicious Montmorency tart cherries, all swimming with either low-fat milk or soy milk. I would switch off every other day. And then I got back to doing my half hour of physical activity a day. And again, that was it, half hour. And in 1 month, I had lost 10 pounds, and the cholesterol went from 238 down to 168. Now, if you look at the scientific literature, you're lucky if you can get that kind of results with cholesterol from lipid-lowering medications. And to me, this cemented the idea that you can add on foods and have tremendous health benefits and enjoy good health one delicious bite at a time.
Is that typical? Can you do this, you know, with exercise and adding that muesli into your breakfast retinue repertoire?
Well, the interesting thing, when looking at the literature, there's over 40 clinical studies and 40 years of studies showing that cholesterol is a oatmeal is a cholesterol soaker-upper. but the average reduction is about 12 points. And what I realized when I was writing this book is that though these foods are really put forth separately, there's synergies between these foods, that almonds have tremendous cholesterol-lowering properties. Cherries help reduce the inflammation that can cause problems with cholesterol sticking to the arteries. That's the real problem. And so I saw when you put all that stuff together, compounded with weight loss, or combined, I should say, with weight loss and also the physical activity, I really, truly believe it was that entire package that caused such dramatic weight, well, not only weight loss, but also cholesterol reduction. And I've seen that repeated with my own patients.
Now, is that why in the recipes you really, seems to me you really have strived to put as many powerhouse foods into a recipe as possible? Is that part of your reasoning, is that it all works together?
Well, I think there's a synergy between all of them, and truth be told, the 101 foods that could save your life, I literally was cutting off my list at 101. I think I've got enough for book two, and I think that's what's so nice about this book. Finally, it's not a book about demonizing carbohydrates or animal proteins or dairy products or fat or whatever the victim of the week may be. This is such a nice, positive nutrition message that many of the foods that the listeners are eating right at this time work really well in a health promotion program. We just got to get the rest of them to come on board. But you're right. Yes, these powerhouse foods, I think, have synergistic properties. But the other thing that's unique about the recipes in this book, I have, besides being a registered dietitian, which I think is even more important, is I'm a dad. I've got three daughters, and I could write all day long about how great these foods are, but if I can't get mom to prepare a meal or dad to prepare a meal for their kids that they'll eat, it doesn't make any difference how great these foods are for you. So, in fact, my three daughters had to give universal thumbs up in order for any of these recipes to make it into the book.
Well, this is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian and dad, David Grotto. He is the author of 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. In addition to the oatmeal muesli that he had to reduce his cholesterol, I mean, like, was he having bacon and eggs every day for breakfast? I mean, did he consciously limit the intake of fatty foods that he took in? And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, that's a great question. My message as a registered dietitian has always been about the deprivation end of the equation, and rightfully so, because there's tremendous literature that shows that the one huge impact on cholesterol is reducing dietary cholesterol and probably even more importantly, saturated fat. I think what happened in my case, and I know what happened in my case, is by concentrating on adding in good-for-me foods, and it wasn't really a lot of them, what happens is a lot of those foods that I was eating on more of a regular basis became a smaller portion of my diet. Note that I never said I gave up a single thing. In fact, here in Chicago, there is a Maxwell Street Polish sausage place called Jimmy's. I remember going out with my wife right after seeing a show, and we've got a Maxwell Street pork chop sandwich all in sautéed onions dripping with butter. I think I ate it and didn't feel real good afterwards, but boy, it tasted good going down. But my point is, I really didn't purposely go out of my way to give up fun and enjoyment of food, but I found getting back to these real simple basic things made a huge impact on cholesterol. And in fact, I developed an equation based on my experience, and I think it really boils down to this. Taste plus doability equals sustainability. In my 20-plus years of being in the trenches as a registered dietitian, I have yet met a single patient who could continue a program of deprivation that eliminated their favorite foods. They just can't do it long-term, and I think there's plenty of science to support that you don't have to do that.
Yeah. What led you to become a dietitian?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is my grandfather, who lived out in La Mesa, California, owned a health food store. And when I was a young lad, my mother used to come home with quote-unquote health foods for me. And what I defined as health foods was licorice whips, rock candy, assorted candy bars from the health food store. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, if this is health foods, I want in. And I actually opened up my own health food store. And what I realized is that many people were coming to me for nutrition advice because, you know, I either experienced some, you know, health achievement like I just shared with you about my own cholesterol. And I felt some sense of responsibility because I was literally grabbing books off the shelves and just giving them whatever information I had my hands on. And I realized not only did I have the power to do good, I had the power to do harm. And I wanted to make sure that what I was doing was scientifically sound. So I decided to go ahead and become a registered dietitian.
Yeah. That's interesting, too. That's a feature of your book, 101 Foods, is you've got throw me a lifesaver advice, and then you've got don't throw me an anvil. Advice.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that feature, those features of the book.
Well, for a point of clarification, it'll be don't throw me an anvil because...
Did I say throw me an anvil?
Well, we don't want to throw anybody an anvil.
No.
If you're swimming and someone throws you an anvil, what happens?
Yeah.
You sink.
Don't throw me an anvil.
Right. And the reason I put that in there, like, here's a good case. Honey actually happens to be one of the 101 foods that could save your life. Well, if you have an infant, that could be throwing them an anvil because they do not have the resistance to the botulism spore like adults do. So I caution people, rightfully so, not to give their infants honey, even though it's a great, you know, sweetener for adults. Other things, I do give some caution that there are some certain foods that may actually decrease what's called platelet adhesion. This is a component of your red blood cells. Now, normally, that's okay. Keeping your blood slippery is a good idea because plaque, harmful blood-stopping plaque, won't adhere to the arteries. But for people that are on blood-thinning medications, this could exacerbate and make it even more complicated. So I think that's what's also very helpful is the appropriate use of these foods.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, David Grotto. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited today. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's go to the toll-free line now and take a call from Oswego. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah. I hit the midlife crisis deal. And all of a sudden started having problems. And I started looking back and seeing what I've been eating and what I've been doing. And I have vertigo. So a lot of what I've been eating, I think, caused it, you know, according to what my doctors say. And it's the sodium in a lot of this stuff. And I started looking. When I was about 48, 49, I started going through stuff, you know, and getting on a health food kick. And I'm surprised that if you look at how much sodium is in stuff around the markets, the supermarkets anymore, it's just ridiculous. You know, and I'm looking at it and thinking, no wonder we're all getting sick and having cancers. And I really started getting real skeptical about, because my family all of a sudden, my dad has cancer, and I hear of all these people getting cancer and dying. So I started doing a little bit of research, and I think a lot of that stuff is brought on by stuff we eat. And people don't realize this. I mean, it's the same thing with meat. We're eating meat that's being injected by hormones, growth hormones. You know, we're all talking about baseball and steroids and all this stuff. You know, it makes me wonder. I mean, the average height of a kid nowadays is about 6 foot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I started getting these books my mother-in-law has sent me on herbs and herbal teas and herbal remedies, and I've been trying to go all natural. Now I don't eat a lot of meat. I eat a lot more vegetables. I do a lot of grilling on the barbecue with vegetables. There's a lot of good books out there that explain, you know, what you can use. And I kind of, I don't cut meat out completely, but I eat a lot more fish. I've always eaten a lot more fish.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding out, you know, there's a lot of good dietary stuff that you can out there on the market that you could use to create a good, healthy meal instead of some of the crap that's out there. I don't know if you come across that or what.
Well, yeah, I think you've got some really important and valid points. And I want to kind of temper that with the good news is that, you know, again, having worked in the natural foods industry, you know, there was more of a leaning toward extreme measures. You feel like you've really got to go ahead and gut your existing diet to fight cancer. I have, in fact, over the past 10 years, worked at an integrative cancer center. And many of the patients that I saw, we put them on very strict vegetarian diets. And though they were very motivated because they were diagnosed with cancer, what I found is many of them were coming to me and saying, geez, you know what, I got a birthday party to go to. I've got this holiday coming up. Is there any way I can cheat? You know, and so they were getting messages that, no, if you just take one bite of sugar, that's going to make all the difference in the world. So what that did is that forced me to look at the literature. And I couldn't come up with an occasional cheat here and there was going to put the kibosh on their efforts. And so I became known as Let's Make a Deal Dave at the center I was working at. And what I found is those people did as good, if not better, than those ones that were sticking to a very strict diet, cutting out all their fun, favorite foods. But really what was happening is that they were putting it all in proper proportion. When we're looking at what causes cancer, there's absolutely a strong link to diet, but there's also a genetic link. There's also exposure to environmental toxins, stress. There's really a plethora of things that combined together, I think, makes it a very complicated picture. But the good news is, if you look at some of the major risk factors, these are things that we have control over. Can we get up and move our bodies? Physical activity helps decrease risk of cancer. Can we eat more plant-based foods? Again, not worried so much about staying away from the meats and that, but let's make more of our plate filled with fresh fruits, vegetables, and whole grains and cut down on our portions of meat. In fact, the American Institute for Cancer Research just released this huge study showing that's exactly what we need to do, not eliminate, but cut down on our meat consumption. And that's where the 101 Foods comes in. You've got plenty of foods to add in that will help you battle cancer and other life's challenges.
I agree with that. The one thing I found out was out there, too, was that the smaller meals, instead of big meals, you know, and I know everybody wants to have a three-course, you know, three meals a day. I've been doing smaller ones, you know, and doing more smaller ones. And in my wife and I will share dinner, for instance, or share a breakfast or something. And it works out great. It saves, you know, you're not spending a lot of money, but at the same time, you're also getting the benefit of healthier eating and people like yourself. Before I get off, I wanted to know the name of the book you have, and then I'll get off.
Sure.
Thanks.
Well, my first comment sounds like you've already been through Advanced Dave Grotto 101, let alone haven't read the book yet, but it's called 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. But, you know, it's not only, as you, a great point, it's not only what we're eating, it's how we eat. You know, we've got books out there like French Women Don't Get Fat and Japanese Women Don't Get Older Fat. Well, what binds those, I guess, two groups together is that they celebrate food. That, you know, eating in their countries versus ours, they don't eat because they get hunger, which is an inconvenience that tried to squash down and quickly go through a drive-thru and wolf something down and move on with their day. They make eating an event to be cherished and to be celebrated with the entire family. They walk to the restaurant, and they eat small, frequent meals throughout the day. It's not big, large meals. So I think you've got a home run going there. You're doing great.
30 minutes a day of exercise. What do you do?
Well, you know, whenever I'm doing a lecture, I always ask people, how many of you are following the National Academy of Science recommendation, which is also reflected in the 2005 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, how many of you are exercising 60 to 90 minutes a day? That's an hour to an hour and a half a day. One, maybe two at best in a room of hundreds of people will raise their hand. Mm-hmm. We keep raising the bar on physical activity, which to me just seems silly. When we don't even get people who are doing what I'm doing, which I think is minimal, is a half hour of physical activity a day. The research is suggesting also, here's the good news, a lot of people say that they're time crunched. They don't have time to do 30 minutes in a row. But they're finding that maybe if you break it up into two 15-minute segments, that you'll actually get more benefit from that than doing it all at the same time.
Mm. So
usually people can notch out 15 minutes in their day.
Yeah, it's a break from work. It's a break from something, and it's not hard that way.
Right. And, you know, you can drag your kids along. You know, one of the routines that I have here, I feel blessed that I'm able to you know, get my kids off in the morning. You know, I had worked for 10 years commuting back and forth, and I never saw my kids for, you know, breakfast or dinner, though I was telling my patients how important that was to have family meals together. So now I'm in a situation where I can actually get them off to school, walk with them. I get my physical activity in there even before hitting the gym. So it can be done.
Yeah, okay. Is it advisable, do you think, to begin with diet and exercise, or maybe we should say food and activity? It sounds a lot more pleasant. To begin with small changes.
Yeah, I think small changes are important, and I think, and I want to go back to the maybe a question about the vernacular we use. You know, I don't like to use the word nutrition. I don't like to use the word weight loss. I don't like to use the words cholesterol reduction. What I have found is that if I focus in on a health enhancement, a life enhancement program, if you will, as a natural side consequence of doing those things that enhance health, which happens to be, yeah, let's not call it exercise, let's just call it fun activity and eating food you enjoy, by doing that, weight comes off, cholesterol comes down, blood pressures are lowered, healing begins. I think we get way too focused on the short portfolio payoff, not the long-term payoff. So it is small changes. And in fact, Dr. James Hill from the University of Colorado heads up a national registry of losers. These are people who have lost weight and kept it off. So these are good losers. And their secret is not doing extreme, you know, rub gravel in your hair type of diets. These are people that are getting out and doing a few more steps of physical activity, eating a little bit smaller portions of those foods that are more calorie-dense versus nutrient-dense. So it's not extreme measures that really works. It is small changes.
Yeah. Is there a food or two or three or more that really satisfies and feels like a splurge?
How long is our show today?
We got about 20 minutes left.
Yeah. Well, I could easily, shamelessly, I guess, say that I've got 101 of them. But, you know, it all depends on what you call a, you know, splurge.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of comfort food. You know, a lot of people think potatoes is that, you know, indulgent food. Well, you know, when I was doing research about the lowly white potato, you know, we've come out of this era of carbohydrate demonization. But if people looked at the literature of the effect of potatoes in particular on our waistlines here, particularly in America, there's actually an inverse relationship. Now, of course, I'm not including French fries in this equation, but when we're looking at just eating potatoes, the more potatoes we've eaten in this country, the lower our weight has been. And the less potatoes, the higher our weight has gone. Now, I don't think that there's 100% direct correlation, but my point is, I think that literature is strong enough to say, let's stop demonizing the potato. I mean, the Irish, God, for how long, have been eating potatoes, and they have not had the weight problems that we've had here in this country until recently. So we've got to look at the literature, and again, that's an indulgence that you can enjoy. In fact, potatoes are so rich in potassium, they may be one of your best tools in fighting strokes, which is another big problem here in the United States.
Hmm. Well, tell us about Arts of Vesuvio potatoes, then.
Well, Arthur Grotto happens to be my father, a.k.a. Noni, which is Italian for grandfather, and my dad was kind enough to share his just-off-the-hook Vesuvio potatoes. I mean, this is something that you go by and you say, oh, my God, how could this possibly be good for you? But it is. It's just, you know, it's got a little bit of olive oil. It uses the seasonings of rosemary and sage, which happen to be part of these powerhouse foods. You know, a little bit of salt for flavoring. You don't even need the salt if you don't want to. A little bit of dry white wine and black pepper. Very simple ingredients, very simple to prepare, but oh so good.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the rubber meets the road. You know, it's all great to talk about how this might help fight a stroke, but what a delicious way of fighting a stroke.
Yeah, if it doesn't taste good, we're not going to do it.
Right.
And we're not, it won't, we can't sustain it.
That's right.
Taste and doability.
Yep. You got the equation.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian and dad, David Grotto. He is the author of 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. The book's entries range from acai berries to yogurt. We're going to talk about those berries in just a moment. The entries include information and about nutritional value and health benefits, and each one includes a recipe to help you incorporate the food into your diet. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. You can join us, listeners, this afternoon with questions, comments. Join us with a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take another call now. Listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
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 In addition to, this is for reducing, or no, I'm sorry, I don't want to reduce that, increasing your HDLs. I know that exercise and also niacin, but in terms of foods and stuff, is there something suggestion there?
Well, absolutely, and that tends to be a little bit more elusive of what can you do to actually raise your HDL cholesterol. Interestingly enough, two of my favorite ways of raising the HDL cholesterol is actually to incorporate avocado and pistachios. So I kind of do a nut combination. I use the almonds to lower the LDL, pistachios to raise the HDL, and also avocados. But that's a great way of doing it. So independent of physical activity, there is not a lot you can do to raise HDL, but that really does help.
Oh, those are two good ones, though. I like both of those. now, the other one is that what about decreasing? I have a moderate level of, let's see what they call it, intraocular pressure.
Yes.
Is there anything? Now, I've read something about garlic. There's something in garlic that supposedly helps decrease this. I'm not sure. I saw some study, but I'm going to go back to that. But do you have any suggestions there?
Yes. Now, intraocular pressure is really talking about the pressure within inside the eye. And is there a connection between blood pressure and an intraocular pressure? I don't know if the case has been made as strongly, but that's exactly what I do recommend. Are those foods that may be beneficial for helping to lower blood pressure by adding them in? Probably one of the best foods for hypertension is beans. And these are beans and legumes, your pintos, your black beans, kidney beans. All those are fantastic. Cinnamon, guava, hazelnuts, there's another nut for you, mangoes, oats, olives. You know, and the other beautiful thing is, in the book, it's cross-reference for medical challenges. So if you're saying, geez, I've got some problems with hypertension, what do? You can just simply turn to that page and look under hypertension. You'll see all the foods singled out that will benefit that health problem.
Mm-hmm. And that particular one, though, is always, my blood pressure has always been good. I've never had a problem with that.
Right.
So anyway. But
that's good, and that's the difficulty, is that there unfortunately is not a strong connection between the two. But so I usually recommend anything that may be beneficial for eye health and also beneficial for blood pressure.
Yeah. What about, do you also get into vitamins, particularly vitamins that are in the food, that kind of thing too, or not?
Yes. You know, the other thing also, having worked in the natural food industry for over, 25 years, in fact, it was almost a knee-jerk reaction to recommend dietary supplements. And if we look at the literature, there's no doubt about it that besides the vitamins and minerals that we already do know about, there are so many hidden nutrients, what are called phytonutrients, that we really don't even have a clue about the treasures that lie within the food that these phytochemicals can afford us. So my bias is always to recommend your nutrients first be derived from food. They're absorbed better in the presence of food. You have all that add-on value. But dietary supplements to help supplement the diet, to help augment the diet, is fine, too. It's just that I find so many people go for that quick fix and focus on the supplements first and say, I'll do that, and then I'll drag food along later. Do it the other way around.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. I really enjoyed your talk. Right now, I'm on infertility treatment, And recently, study said that fat is good for fertility, and they recommend us to eat more ice cream. But however, I feel uncomfortable to eat too much fat, such as ice cream and animal fat. So can you tell me, like, specific what kind of fat is good for fertility? And does it include fat in avocado? Now I eat a lot of avocado in my diet.
Yes.
And but kind of like eat too much, and I said I just want to eat something else. And so can you tell me what else should I eat?
No, that's a great question. And here's a classic example where the message is half right. But unfortunately, the other half, if you do it the wrong way, may complicate matters even more. In fact, the research is suggesting that omega-3 fats, which are derived from fish, and there are some plant sources of that, may actually aid in helping to promote more of an environment for fertility. However, those fats that are rich in saturated fats, more from animal fat, may not be the thing to do. So the wisdom of recommending pounding down some more ice cream, I don't think, unless you're doing chunky fish ice cream, I probably wouldn't recommend that. Well, that sounds gross already,
yeah.
Doesn't it? But I would definitely suggest, if you like fatty fish, like salmon, cod, sardines, tuna, those are all fantastic sources of omega-3 fats. The other type of fats, yes, the avocado. In fact, almonds, there's some good research there that may help. Artichokes, asparagus, and then there's actually a Chinese berry called the goji berry. A lot of people are not aware of that unless they are of Asian descent and they're used to eating goji berries, but there's actually rich phytochemicals that have been associated with enhancing fertility.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Speaking of goji berries, we've got acai berries on the table, too. Tell us about these two berries, because I suspect that a lot of folks are not familiar with them.
Yeah, acai berries are kind of the up-and-comer, if you will. They've been pretty popular the past couple of years. And what's unique about this berry, it is indigenous to the Amazon rainforest. You will not find it outside the rainforest as a fresh product because it's highly perishable. So what they do is they flash freeze the acai pulp and they package it up and ship it to us here in the United States and throughout the world. But what's interesting is that the taste is a cross between raspberries and chocolate. Could that sound more perfect?
Mm.
And ironically, it provides maybe even more nutritional value than wine, chocolate, and raspberries, possibly even combined, from a what's called a phytochemical standpoint. And but I always tell people that there's anything that ends in airy happens to be a tremendous food for you. So if you don't have access to acai berries, you know, strawberry, blueberry, raspberry, pomegranate, airy, any of those things actually work really well.
And the goji berry, what is that?
Yeah, the goji berry, the half the fun of writing this book is not only finding out about the nutritional value of these foods, but to actually find out how it was used in different cultures. And in fact, the goji berry hails from Tibet and Inner Mongolia. And in fact, there's a lot of food lore with that. That talks about monks praying underneath goji berry trees and so forth, and calling to the goji berry for wisdom. But when we look at the nutritional value, there's some research that suggests that this goji berry actually helps with lowering your total cholesterol, lowering triglycerides, which is the fat that courses through the veins, for especially those people that have what's called metabolic syndrome, where they collect a lot of fat around the midsection. Goji berries may actually help suck up those fats and help lower them. It may also help with diabetes. They actually had an animal study showing that it helped control blood glucose even better with those that had not consumed the goji berry. And here we were just talking about cancer. Research is showing that it might be beneficial for helping to stop leukemia in its tracks. So that would be an awesome thing to enhance the effectiveness of potentially even radiation therapy, and there's some research to support that as well.
Why are berries such nutritional superstars?
I think the reason that they are is that they are low calorie dense, meaning that you could eat about a cup of those and you're looking at about 60 calories all day long. I mean, so you get a good volume of them. Because of their low moisture content, really what you're getting most is nutrients instead of just a lot of water. So you're getting a lot of these things that are called phytochemicals, these particular plant chemicals called anthocyanins. That's those purpley sort of coloring, the cherries, the blueberries, you know, those dark berries that have so much anti-inflammatory properties that also work as pain relievers. In fact, there's great research showing that tart Montmorency cherries, these are the ones that you find in pies versus the sweet Bing cherries, are tremendous for reducing pain. My father and brother, who had always suffered from gouty arthritis, I got them drinking 4 ounces of this tart cherry juice every day. And within a week, they were off their allopurinol, their gout-fighting medication, just by adding in 4 ounces of black cherry juice to their day.
Hmm. Let's take some more calls. Next, we're going to go to Sycamore. Line 4, hi.
Hi. I got a slightly different angle on foods, and that is a search for something that will help repel mosquitoes. I live in a mosquito-infested area, and I've been using repellent for many years, which is effective, but of course you wonder what that chemical is doing to you when you spray it on your skin. And I'm wondering, I've heard things about vitamin B1, but that didn't seem to work at all for me, and I was wondering if you had any other suggestions.
Well, interestingly enough, I think you were 1B off. It was actually vitamin B2, which is riboflavin. That may be more beneficial in repelling mosquitoes, not by vitamin B1, which is thiamine. So that would be one thing I would recommend. Interestingly enough, in the book, I talk about taking banana peels and rubbing them on mosquito bites. That's been a traditional home remedy for helping to heal mosquito bites. But one of the surefire things that I found to be very beneficial for helping from a dietary standpoint with mosquito and repelling them is to take something called nutritional yeast. Now, that's not in the book. But nutritional yeast is very rich, in fact, riboflavin. That kind of gives the yellow coloring to the yeast. And for some unknown reason, nobody really knows the reason why. Maybe it's an odor thing or something, but you don't smell it. But apparently the mosquitoes think you're pretty stinky.
How about that? Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Okay,
thanks a
good,
lot.
Good luck, and may you be mosquito-free.
Well, let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champagne, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I do know that omega-3 and omega-6 are very important. However, I'm not a big fish fan, number one. And number two, I do keep hearing about the pollutants in the fish, that just the environmental mercury, et cetera. So I have been, and maybe I'm wrong about that, I have been looking into, plant-based omega-3 and omega-6. Is that a realistic thing to do? And I've looked in the health food section, and I have looked at the supplements, and there is one in particular, which I won't mention the name, but it claims that it has a proper balance between omega-3 and omega-6, and that it is plant-based. Is that a possibility?
Well, yes, and in fact, I know exactly the formulation that you're talking about. In fact, it claims to be a balance between omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9, and for those that are keeping score and are math experts, omega-3 plus omega-6 does not equal omega-9, so these are three just different categories of fats. But let me give you some examples. So omega-9 was what we were just talking about, these monounsaturated fats like avocado and olive oil, so those are plant bases of omega-9s. Omega-6s are probably the vast majority of the fats that we consume here in the United States. Those happen to be animal fats. Those are mostly omega-6. And also plant-based fats such as corn oil, safflower, sunflower. Those are more of the omega-6 fats, too. And we need those. Those are what are called essential fatty acids. However, it's kind of this balance thing. We've gotten way too much omega-6 and not enough of the omega-9s and not enough of the omega-3s. Now, many of my patients who are vegetarian or particularly vegan that are not using any animal products whatsoever are always looking for a vegetable solution, if you will, an option for getting omega-3s. To spare you from a long science lecture, the plant-based omega-3 fats that we get, which sources are things like walnuts, flax, canola oil, soy, those are all sources of omega-3s. Those have to convert into the form of omega-3s that we get from fish. It just doesn't do it as efficiently. So if you're not going to eat fish, I'm going to ask you to be a little bit more heavy-handed on those that I just mentioned to you, but it absolutely can be done.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Martinsville. Line 2, hi.
Hi. I was curious on, there's evidence on, when you look at antioxidants and you look at these things and different vitamins and biochemicals, the only problem I have is how much clinical data is there to support of either preventing cancer or to reversing or preventing cardiovascular disease or diabetes or whatever. Where is the clinical data and which foods have demonstrated these on any large clinical trials?
Right. And that's a really good point to bring up. And, in fact, I addressed that in the introduction of the 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. The truth of the matter is, when it comes to research in the food arena, when you're looking at clinical human trials, large meta-analysis, those things that we see so often being provided in pharmaceutical research, unfortunately, that is not as abundant in the food research arena. Now, I'll give you a good classic example why I looked at all levels of evidence here, whether it was cell line, animal studies, and so forth. And this is one of the reasons why I also included home remedies. If you take a look at the history of mom using cranberries to help fight urinary tract infections for her daughters, she was doing this for centuries, yet never knew what the mechanism was. However, most recently, within the past few years, we now finally have understood why that does work, and that is an option. So, and especially having worked in the cancer care arena for the past 10 years, I personally had problems with waiting to tell my patients for 20 years of clinical data to come out to feel comfortable about adding broccoli as a potential protector to their body, though maybe we knew intuitively that it worked. But the bottom line is I have 1,200 medical references in this book that show on some level of evidence that maybe adding these foods in has some protective benefit to it. Is it a slam dunk? I would love to say it is. But I also think that it's a combination of things. This is step one. Let's add in some foods that are delicious and are good for us. Let's add in a little bit of physical activity. If we look at the vast majority of those conditions that are plaguing Americans today, they are of our own choosing, meaning that the risk factors associated with those are things that we have control over. And to me, that's a, not pointing fingers, but that's the good news. Let's start exercising. Let's start adding in some foods that are delicious. One step at a time, we can do it.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for his call, and we're going to take one more call here before we're out of time, and that is a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Oh, I just lost volume. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you for your excellent program, both of you. Really, this is fascinating. I was wondering if you had ever studied beneficial or foods that are the opposite you should avoid according to your blood type. There is this book out about, you know, foods that you should, and I understand it's related to the stickiness of the red blood cell in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, this is just to give you one example. I'm blood type O. So on these little cards, it says avoid barracuda, catfish, caviar, but you could have cod, hake, and halibut. But okay, does this make any sense to you?
Well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm biting my tongue, and I'm trying not to laugh. I'm certainly not at you. I think it would be directed more to Dr. Peter Diodama, who wrote the blood type kind of series of books. In fact, I've done a review of this book as a spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association, and I think to quote the quote I had is that, you know, according to Dr. Diodamo, I'm a blood type O, and in his book he's saying that we should be all kind of in essence thirsting over roadkill. You know, that we are by nature carnivores. You know, we should be eating more of a animal-based diet, and we shouldn't be vegetarians.
Because we were the original hunters.
Yes, and I mean, that all sounds great, but, you know, my question, like the previous caller, which is a reasonable question to ask, is show me the data. Show me the data beyond his own clinic. Show me those researchers that have been able to replicate his data to show, indeed, he's on the right track. Now, in defense of Dr. Diodamo, I will say that the diet overall that he espouses is healthy. But whether you should cookie cut to your blood type, the dietary program that he's recommending for you is somewhat questionable. I do agree also that diets need to be individualized. That's why I have, instead of a handful of powerhouse foods, I have 101. What if you don't like garlic? What if you don't like blueberries? People need options. And the good news is there's so many foods that are provided for us here on this earth that we can eat to heal our bodies naturally. There's no reason we can't take full advantage of them.
There, we have to leave it. We're out of time. David Grotto, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
David Grotto is a registered dietitian. He is the author of 101 Foods That Could Save Your Life. The book is published by Bantam.